We've invited a good friend into the studio, Miria Baladawa. Hi, Miria.
Hi, Jean. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
Really appreciate you coming by the studio this evening and on a cold winter's night to come and chat with us about this new adventure that you're launching into.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a new alternative health practice that's opened up on Main Street, 149 Main Street here in Van Cleek Hill. 149 Main Street East, as we like to tag on to the end of our address here as well, 76 Main Street East in Van Cleek Hill. And so we've invited the person behind this new initiative into the studio this evening, Miria Baladawa. And if that sounds like a familiar name, it's because Miria has been working in town since 1990 and has also been an active volunteer with local minor sports associations of Van Cleek Hill. And and also you were involved with the Moms and Tots.
Right, yeah, ran that group for many years.
Yeah, yeah. So an active member of our community. Everybody knows Wigger & Holland is sort of an accounting firm here in town, and you've been a familiar face behind one of the desks there for, as I said, since 1990,
16 years.
Yeah.
16 years, yeah.
Quite a track record, quite a long time. And now sort of a big fork in the road, a new direction for you.
Yes.
So we're gonna explore that. I mean, you're not leaving. You're not making any big radical changes or departures or anything like that.
No, just, not at all. Not at this point. Yeah, no.
But also just adding a new passion and a new outlet, I guess, to what you do on a regular basis. Very, very interesting. So I guess part of the context for doing this, as we mentioned earlier, your number two event in the speaker series, January 23rd, it's a Saturday at 7:30 p.m. You're going to be doing a presentation on dynamic energy therapy, the power of the body to heal itself. So that's sort of the context for why we invited you in, just to give people sort of a foretaste of what you're going to be talking about. And as Phil Arbor loves to say, these are interactive talks with interesting people. So I think it's going to be a sort of back and forth you're counting on, a kind of dialogue with the audience.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
Yes, yes.
I think it's important for people to ask questions and for people to come and get the information that they're looking to get.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I think that the speaker series is a great way to do it.
Yes, yeah, it's a great opportunity. And of course, we're lucky because we get you to come into the studio here, and we have you all to ourselves to ask you all sorts of questions ahead of time, hopefully to whet people's appetite, right? And
right.
to get them interested in what you have to say, and they'll be able to get sort of the long version of your presentation at Arbor Gallery on the 23rd of January. But we do have a couple of questions lined up for you. You were very sort of generous with your bio. You gave us a little bit of details of your background and what you've been up to. You graduated from Bishop University, for example, in 1988 with a Bachelor of Science degree and a double major in biology and business.
Right.
That must have been a full-time job getting through those courses.
Well, that was an interesting thing because I went in for biology, actually, to get a degree in biology. And along the way, my brother was there at the same time, and he suggested that I take some business courses. And because
I was good to have a skill to fall back on, kind of thing.
Well, also because I was at the university in the summertime, and he said, "Well, why don't you take some courses during the summertime?"
Oh,
and so that's how that started. And then I said, "Well, I'm here. I might as well do a double major. Why not?"
Isn't that interesting?
So that's
and,
how that,
that
happened.
And that became your major career for 16 years.
Yeah,
on the business side of things.
On the business side of things. Yeah.
What kind of work do you do for Wigger & Holland? Just so you don't mind me asking.
Accounting. Okay. We do corporate taxes.
Yes.
Mostly.
Yes. Okay.
Corporate accounting.
Okay.
Mostly, and we do a bit of income tax.
Yes.
But, our main forte is corporate.
Okay, so a good knowledge of business practices and principles and that kind of thing has stood you in good stead
right.
all these years. The Bachelor of Science degree, I'm curious about that too, biology. So that to me would sort of indicate the other sort of side of your passion, which is things medical and how the human body works and the body's power to heal itself as well. It must come from that branch of your curiosity and your interest.
Oh, for sure. I mean, for years I've been interested in biology, alternative medicine. I was a monitor with the La Leche League for many years.
Yes.
Over the years, I treated my kids with, homeopathy, had naturopaths.
Okay.
Went to acupuncturists. So it's kind of a natural progression. It's not, it would seem that it all happened all of a sudden, but it's been a natural progression for the last 16 years or so.
And even more, I think you mentioned that you have it in your blood. You come by it honestly. Your grandfather was a kind of medical practitioner as well.
Yes, yeah.
He was fantastic. Tell us a story. This is really neat.
Well, my grandfather was actually a medicine man.
Yes.
In Uganda. He was in the village.
Fantastic.
And he was the person that people came to.
You said he was well respected.
Yeah, he was very well respected. Yeah. People would come in and be treated by him.
And you witnessed this as a
I did when we used to go home in the summertime.
Yes.
Yeah, I used to see my grandfather giving treatments to people, people who'd come in, and you know, and they'd come in with a goat, a chicken, or whatever, to make payment.
Yeah,
so it was kind of neat, and I was always fascinated by it. But I didn't live in Uganda at the time, so I only got the opportunity every other summer to witness some of what he did.
What was your understanding of it at the time? Did you sort of understand what was going on, or?
Well, I think because I grew up in two very different worlds. I mean, my grandfather grew up in a village in Uganda, and I grew up in the Western world.
Yeah, so a foot in both worlds.
So going back there and not quite understanding, but being fascinated by the whole thing.
Yes.
And also knowing about the traditional medical system.
Were you skeptical when you saw that? Did you sort of think, because, you know, like, I mean, if you're a younger person, you know, we get sort of maybe skeptical of our closest relatives sometimes and sort of think, oh, that's the old way of doing things, or that would never wash in the new country kind of thing, or were you sort of open to it?
Well, as a child, I was fascinated by it, but what happened is, especially in third world countries, people are trying to get away from traditional herbalistic medicine.
Yes, and go for the modern way.
And go for the modern way.
In air quotes.
So it was kind of interesting as an experience to have that.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And also my parents wanted to get away from it as well, because they had been educated in the Western world
So part of going to a new life and a new way of doing things would be to leave those practices behind, I suppose.
Right. Yeah.
But you still maintain your curiosity and your interest in it.
Oh yes. Oh yes. I found my grandfather very, very fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. What do you think he would say if he knew? I imagine he's not alive anymore.
No.
But what would he have said if he knew that you were sort of getting into a kind of medical practice of sorts?
Well, I think he'd be proud.
Yeah?
I think he'd be very proud, and I think he'd be glad that what he was teaching and what he was doing
was still being continued.
I mean, he wrote a book actually about about his practice. I mean, the book is, we don't have the book, we have to find the book, but he did write a book about his...
Oh, wow, that would be worth tracking down.
Right, yeah.
Wow.
So that would be interesting
You'll have to keep us posted on how that hunt goes, because that would be fantastic to track that down and come in and give us some readings from it. That would be really something. So, yes, as I was saying, you've come by your passion and your interest in things medical and how the body heals itself quite legitimately, quite honestly. It's in your genes. And you say in your bio that over the years you've had the opportunity to interact with specialists in the fields of naturopathy, homeopathy, hypnosis, different acupuncturists, I guess, and energy medicine workers, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a little bit of a background to that. Like, how is that in terms of for your own use and your family? Or?
Yeah, mainly for my own use and for my children as well.
Mm.
Because, like I say, I've always been a big believer in alternative and traditional medicine combined.
Yes, yes.
Because I think both have their place in modern society. In order to treat someone, you have to treat the whole person. The whole person.
But I noticed that you mentioned not to the exclusion of what do we call it, modern medicine or allopathy, I guess.
Right.
You have room for that as well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, one of my earliest experiences with alternative medicine was with my youngest son. And he was having a breathing crisis.
Mm.
So, I mean, when your son's having a breathing crisis, I think you need to go to the hospital.
Yes, yeah.
But after that, I was able to kind of switch over and combine the two modalities and treat him homeopathically And
well
also,
done.
yeah.
Yes. So they're sort of they're complementary, and as you said, treating the whole person. I mean, I think they're coming. I'm just judging by interviews I hear on the CBC on a regular basis. It feels like the mainstream medical community is coming around to thinking that way of treating the whole person and not viewing organs and limbs as in isolation.
Exactly.
But it seems to be a very slow progression, and you sort of wonder how much of that is making its way into the medical schools. I think there is some progress, but it seems to be very slow.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot to be done. I mean, there's a lot of learning, a lot, even ourselves, we're still always learning about all these different modalities, about energy medicine, about even dynamic energy therapies. And,
yes. Well, that's a good segue. I wanted to ask you, you're practicing in the field of dynamic energy therapy and direct pressure point approach. So why don't you give us a little overview or maybe a little history of what those particular disciplines entail, what they're about?
Well, direct pressure point has its base in chiropractic. So it's a chiropractor who initially developed the system. And after that, he also said that there was a link between physical pain and psychological trauma or events that happen in our lives. So the chiropractic part of it is that we can treat the body from a skeletal point of view. We can go and see if there are distortions in the skeletal system. Mm. But in addition to that, we also go through the glandular system, through the muscular system, to see where the distortions are, because like I was saying, oftentimes the pain in the body is can compare it to a broken fuse.
Yes,
if you're overcharging a system, something's going to blow.
Something's going to release.
Yeah.
Because it's just too much for the system to
bear.
It's
too much for the system. And oftentimes what happens is someone will have pain. It'll manifest itself as pain in the body. So what we do, we go in and we question the body. And that's part of the evolution where kinesiology also came into the practice, where you're questioning the body to see where the distortions are. So your body holds all the answers.
Hmm.
So in questioning the body and saying, what does the individual need to treat in order to release the pain? Is it an emotional cause? Is it a physical cause? And therefore we can go and say, this specific place, whether it's in the muscular system, the skeletal system, the glandular system, needs to be addressed in order for that pain to be released from the body.
Interesting. The phrase came to mind when you said that about your body sort of contains the history of your life.
Contains the answers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I read a line somewhere that said your biology is your biography. And so you're basically that's built on the notion that every experience in life
is living in you somewhere.
It resides in your bones or your muscles or your joints somewhere. Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, like, you don't have to remember the event consciously
for it to have an
for
impact.
It to
on
have
your
an
body.
Impact.
That's what
on
I was
your
just
body.
Going to say. If your body, I went to you did a presentation at St. John's Anglican Church Hall, and I went to that, but isn't it a funny thing that your body has the answers, but sometimes you can't find them.
Right. Yes.
Like, why is that? Because logic and rationale don't.
Because they dominate, I think. Because I find, like, as a man, I've said this to some of my friends who are into yoga and energy work and that kind of thing, that I think as a man, we're not raised to pay particularly close attention to our bodies.
No.
And to tune into what's going on. I think women in general are more tuned in than men are. So if you try to apply your analysis and reason and that kind of thing to what's going on and why you're sick, you're not going to come even anywhere near the real source of what's going on, or certainly your body won't have a chance to explain to you what's going on.
Right.
Is that sort of the idea that?
Yeah, and also sometimes people don't handle their traumas well.
So there's a tendency to deny it or to bury it?
So it just gets forgotten, or, you know, you have other
you
things going on.
You
don't
it.
Quite remember. You ignore it. You keep moving on because you have things to do.
Yes.
So, and then the thing is, the stress, one stress upon another stress upon another stress.
It doesn't go away. It just gets buried.
Away. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, you use the phrase, you communicate with the body, or
you question the body.
So how does that, what kind of procedure is that? How does that go?
Kinesiology.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which means what?
Muscle testing.
Oh, okay.
So
yes.
So we use muscle testing to question the body and see exactly.
So give us an example of what that would look like, just as one particular form of muscle
testing.
Well,
visually, it's very, very difficult to do all over the radio, but yeah. If someone's standing in front of you and their arm is extended
straight out, okay.
Straight out,
yeah.
You can ask the question and your body will respond with a yes or no answer.
So you try to sort of reduce it down to really simple questions of yes or no.
Yeah.
And then rather than asking the person to answer, you're asking their arm to respond.
Yeah, because your arm will respond to a yes or no answer.
Yes, okay.
Depending on what the question is. If you ask the right question, your body will respond.
I have to say, I've actually experienced this quite a few times, and it's a very strange feeling because you don't...
It's like you're not in charge of your arm,
that's right.
But your arm is speaking for you.
You don't really know how your body is responding and how it's... And what it's communicating, it's independent of your mind somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 And that's a fascinating thing because it's not even
the strongest. That's what I'm saying. When you're questioning the body, but your mind, you're going directly to the body because the mind is sort of running interference.
Circumventing the mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. So that must have taken a fair amount of training to be able to tune into that and pay attention to it and not listen to, you know, what the person is saying or trying to communicate in other ways.
Well, I mean, you ask the question to the person because sometimes they want to treat a particular symptom, but the body always knows what's priority to treat. So, I mean, the muscle testing with the arm, I mean, we don't do that through the whole treatment, which could last, you know, 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
that's just part of your diagnostic process, I guess.
Yeah, initially.
Yeah.
Initially.
Okay.
Yeah. But then, you know, the person, we treat the person on a bed.
Okay.
So we can test through the feet.
Right.
So that's another technique that
okay.
we use to question the body.
Interesting. Another phrase that I read recently comes to mind, goosebumps never lie.
Oh.
and it was sort of another illustration of how the body is sort of reacting to the world around us independently of the mind, you know? Like, that's not something we can control.
You can't control that.
If we get goosebumps over some thought or something that we look at or even a smell or a memory, it's the body sort of communicating totally independently of your mind.
Right. Yeah.
Really interesting concept. Yeah. So once you've sort of done this, I guess the communication with the body is ongoing in terms of paying attention to how it's responding to your treatment, that kind of thing. But what does the treatment itself consist of once you've established, oh, this is the kind of trauma that is in the body and it's in this location, then what would you do?
Yeah, because what we're asking the body initially is, okay, so you have shoulder pain, for example. Okay, why do you have shoulder pain? Did you fall? Mm. Was it a physical cause? No, someone didn't fall. How long have you had the ailment? Has it been a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years?
Yeah.
What happened at the point that you began to experience the shoulder pain? Was there a specific event? Was there, like I say, did you have a physical fall?
Yeah.
So what happened? So that's what we're trying to determine, why the person is having physical pain.
And if there wasn't a physical cause of it, then you start hunting for non-physical reasons?
Yeah, perhaps emotional.
Mm-hmm. Some unresolved thing?
Some unresolved thing, or it's linked to an event, linked
like
to
a death or
a death
to a trauma or
something. Some trauma. Hmm. And that's the way that your body has responded to this trauma. And what we try and do is tell your body that you don't need to respond that way anymore.
Wow. You sort of reassure it that everything's okay.
Right. Because that's how your body has developed its way of responding to what happened to you. either shoulder pain, neck pain. I mean, it can be a variation of different things. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is we give the treatment in order to, for your body to understand that it doesn't need to have the pain related to the trauma that it experienced okay. 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
I'm guessing that there's a fair amount of intuition and empathic kind of communication going on here.
Well, there's a certain amount of empathy, and of course you have to, you know, be a good communicator and tuned in and listen. But what we do is very precise. Mm. I mean, we ask the body, so if it's skeletal, we'll go and, you know, give the energetic treatment.
Specifically. To that part of the body.
Mm. So we're not kind of moving around guessing.
Yeah.
It's very precise and very specific.
Mm. Wow, this is really
what
fascinating.
What you need to treat. Yeah. Yes. Mm.
The question comes to mind. I think I've asked Pat Deacon this question as well. She's the homeopath that we were talking about earlier that's doing the brown bag series. How important it is for the person that you're treating to actually believe or have confidence in this process or this approach. And Pat declared that she's had clients who had sort of been coerced or talked into coming to see her by relatives or something. She said, quite independent, that results can happen quite independently of whether or not they're buying into it or they're believing it. And I was wondering what your experience was. Is it essential that the person seeing you actually believes that you can help them, or have you seen results happen in spite of people being skeptical?
Well, I think I've had people surprised.
Yeah.
You know, they've gotten off the table and they're surprised.
Yeah, that's interesting. So unexpected results.
Unexpected. We're not, you know, it's not a very showy treatment. You know, it's very gentle.
There's no razzmatazz.
No fireworks and bells and whistles.
Right. So they get off the table and they're going,
I can move.
What was that?
That's
you
interesting.
Know? Or they're feeling lighter. They're feeling, you know, some of the examples, some people come in and they have postural problems and they get off the table and they feel 2 inches taller simply because of the way that their bodies responded to the treatment.
Yes.
So that I've had a lot of people surprised.
Yeah.
I think that's
interesting. It would indicate that they didn't know what to expect, or that they had low expectations, or didn't know how things were going to go, but something good happened.
Right. And I think these kind of treatments, energy treatments, are relatively new to people. So people know when they go in for massage what they're going to be getting.
Yes.
They're going to be getting a massage.
Yeah, and they even know to a certain extent how they're going to feel.
How they're
going to
feel.
They,
coming into a dynamic energy therapy treatment, they don't know what to expect. Hmm.
And would this be true even for people who have been in a couple of times, that it's going to be a new experience almost each time in some ways?
I think when people come, because sometimes there are layers to a treatment.
Mm.
So someone comes in and they have a specific ailment, and then that goes away or is reduced, and then they come in the next time and something else is happening. And sometimes people are multi-layered, multifaceted.
Like an onion, eh? It's
many layers to peel. Yeah. So sometimes the next time they come in, they might have something else that has shifted in their lives.
Hmm.
And so they need to treat that then.
I'm curious to know, like, is it still an adventure for them, or sort of is it still a surprise when they've peeled back a new layer of their ailment or what's blocking them from having full mobility or whatever? Is it?
I think so. I think because how can I put it? Because I think people are. I think we tend to think a lot.
Yes, too much sometimes.
Think too much. So after a couple of treatments, maybe some of that thinking goes away.
It's interesting. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Almost by definition, it's going to be a surprise, because if we're dominated by our rational mind most of the time and something happens outside of that domain, it's going to be a little bit of a wake up and say, holy smokes, I didn't realize that, right? Just by definition, almost, it's out of left field for most of us.
For a lot of people, yes.
Because we spend so much time in our heads, right, and analyzing and criticizing and just examining, you know, in a really sort of cerebral way what's going on and why.
Yeah, and we like to have control as well.
Yes.
We like to have control over how we feel and what we feel and...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And suddenly some of that is let go.
But you're sliding people into another domain. do you encourage people or coach people to sort of pay more attention to their bodies and sort of learn themselves to listen to their muscles and to know what's going on? Or is that part of what you practice?
Would I say that I encourage? I always encourage people to listen, because I think the body often will give you signs.
Try to communicate in one way or another.
Right.
Pain is that.
Pain, you know, pain is the ultimate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's after your body has been talking to you for...
So what are some other signs that the body might give us that are not quite at the pain level yet?
Stress, fatigue.
Okay.
Stress and fatigue are some of the big ones.
That we should be paying attention to before it gets to the actual pain point.
Yeah.
That's interesting, yeah. I think, these are common ailments in society that everybody is sort of hopes that they can keep on going and dealing with their fatigue until it hopefully goes away.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's interesting. Louise, I'm going to ask you if you wouldn't mind lining up another cut of music for here. We're going to take a little musical break and then come back and continue our conversations with Miria Balidawa. Hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Yes, you are.
Okay, thank you. Really interesting conversation about a new practice that she's setting up here on Main Street in Banklik Hill, 149 Main Street East to be exact. And it's a practice of direct energy and direct energy therapy, or no, dynamic energy therapy, direct pressure point.
Yes.
practice here on Main Street in Bagley Hill, as I was saying. So when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Miria.
That was Jenny Miner with Un bout de rêve.
Yeah.
Un bout de rêve. Is that an end of a dream? One end of a dream?
A part of a dream, maybe.
Un bout de rêve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beautiful song.
Yeah. She's such a lovely singer. From her CD, Les Valises, a local girl from Saint-Eugène, Jenny Miner. Or Jenny René.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know she was from Saint-Germain.
Yeah.
Attended she's VCI. Touring the world. She was at Yes Women Can.
Yeah, I have her CD.
She's very, very popular down in the Caribbean countries. Apparently she has a huge following down there. Kind of a French jazz singer. We're in conversation here with Miria Balidawa. And for two reasons. One is you're opening your practice on Main Street here in Banklik Hill, 149 Main Street East in Banklik Hill. And for the other one is that you're doing a presentation as part of the speaker series, January 23rd, that's a Saturday, 7:30 in the evening at Arbor Gallery. And your presentation is entitled, The Power of the Body to Heal Itself.
Right.
And I think that's gaining more and more sort of currency these days. A lot of people are tuning into that. There was a time, I wanted to get your take on this, what your feelings are about the placebo effect. Because there was a time that where medical practitioners sort of talked about the placebo effect with a bit of derision and saying, waving it off and saying, that's nothing, it's just the placebo effect. Mm-hmm. But in fact, what we're talking about is the body's ability to heal itself and to bring to bear its own energies on getting better. And I think it's being held in a lot more respect, even by the mainstream medical community now. They don't disregard it and toss it off as nothing anymore, because it's a pretty high standard that not all medicines and all general practices can actually meet the placebo effect, which is often up around 30-40%. Mm-hmm. And a lot of medications don't get that kind of results.
Right.
So what are your thoughts on the placebo effect? I'm curious.
Well, I think, in my practice, in the kind of therapy that I do, I think it's a bit difficult for it to be placebo, because people don't know what to expect. So they're coming in, and it's not like they're thinking there's a yes and there's a no answer.
Or a prescribed outcome.
Outcome, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's nothing, I don't believe that it can be a placebo effect in this case. And the thing is, you know, with placebo effects, if something's not harmful to you and it works, well, why not?
That's what I'm saying. I think the reputation of placebo has really come a long way. I mean, there was a time when people were really skeptical and they would just write it off as placebo. But many, many people now are starting to talk about it as the positive energy of the body to heal itself that's manifesting itself in placebo. So, I think it seems to me that it's sort of the realm that you're operating in.
And I think
to a certain extent.
There are a lot of people. I mean, one of the books that I enjoy is by a lady called Barbara Brennan, and she does energy work. And she was a physicist with NASA.
Oh, really? Oh,
so,
wow.
So I think
it feels like it's the flip side of science or something.
Science,
it feels like you,
So you have, you know, people who are using their logical mind and doing, you know, work in the logical field that are also practicing energy medicine and
still
seeing
open.
The benefits and still open and seeing the benefits of it.
Interesting. One of the questions I wanted to ask you was, you personally, doing this kind of work, do you find, do you have to guard against losing energy in the process, like when you're dealing with other people's energy layers and fields and whatnot, and they are having to deal with distortions and pain and maybe blocked energy, that kind of thing? Can it have an effect on your personal energy fields of depletion or that kind of thing?
Well, I haven't had it happen to me. I haven't had, I go in prepared. I'm well rested. Mm-hmm. I've tried to nourish my body well.
Mm-hmm.
And going in, I'm going in to treat the person and to see where I can help them. And it's a very specific technique. Therefore, I don't need to use my own energy because I'm not using my own energy. I'm giving the other person
access to their own energy, I guess. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good way of putting it.
Hmm.
Yeah. In order to open up those channels for them to be able to heal, because I'm not doing any healing.
So if it were costing you energy-wise, then you would suspect that you're doing something wrong, maybe that it shouldn't be, right? And you'd have to adjust yourself and say, wait a minute, this is not about me. This is the person that I'm on the table in front of me kind of thing.
Well, I think also with any interaction, any human interaction, you can get wrapped up in that interaction.
Yes, yes.
Or not.
Well, there's an ebb and flow of energy between people all the time, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that's a normal part of things. But when you're dealing with more extreme cases of people who are unwell, you know, or trying to solve a problem, that's what I was saying. Maybe there's a danger that you could get sort of drawn into,
and that's where you probably have to protect yourself and see them as this belongs to them, not to you.
Okay.
And you're treating the person, but you don't need to get drawn into those kind of energies.
Yeah, yeah.
You can still help the person and still have compassion and still be able to treat someone without becoming a part of their history.
Yes. Interesting. You mentioned that part of your preparedness for you know, being available to people is making sure that you're in good shape and that you've taken care of your dietary needs and that kind of thing. Is this part of what you sort of encourage the people that you're treating to do as well? Like to make sure that they're having a good diet and exercise and that kind of thing, good sleep?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, my grand vision is to be able to treat people in my field and as well to partner with other people who are also offering alternative therapies,
yes,
or nutritional support,
yes,
homeopathy, for example,
okay,
that I believe in, because I think that individuals need to be treated
holistically. Yes, yes.
And as an individual, I can't offer that to everybody.
No,
I can't offer all those things to that person.
Because you've chosen a very specific
This is what
discipline.
I need to concentrate myself on. Yes. But at the same time, there are a lot of great people out there who can also help to treat that same person.
That was going to be one of my questions, actually. It feels like Van Clinic Hill in particular is sort of attracting practitioners in different fields. Homeopathy, I mentioned earlier, Pat Deacon, other people. I know Anand Yassine does energy work. There's Reiki practitioners around.
Yoga.
Yoga as well. Yes. So it's maybe we're building up a critical mass of practitioners that maybe, like you were saying, you know, you could be surround yourself with other disciplines and have a holistic.
And I think it's important to have that. I think it's important to have a support system
rather than in isolation that someone's either just getting the one thing. I had a question too. I know we're coming to the end, but I don't want to ruin your train of thought. But you were saying that when you find a distortion or maybe the source of the problem and you start asking people, well, if it was 2 years ago, what happened then? Do people tell you? Do they know? Do you bring it out? Or how, like, what if, do you know what I mean? Like, do people have it there and they just haven't looked at it for a while?
Sometimes it'll click and they'll go, yes, that's what happened that year. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when I started having this pain, this is what happened. Right. Other people, it's a little bit more subtle and they don't remember. It can be just an event, you know, they had an argument with their spouse, for example.
Yeah.
So it can be something subtle like that, and someone doesn't necessarily remember what it was, but your body has responded to it, therefore your body knows what it was. So the person doesn't actually have to specifically remember the specific event for the treatment to work.
That's interesting.
I mean, oftentimes it's better, especially if you know, they're in a lot of pain. It's easier and a little bit more effective if they remember.
Yes.
Because then you can go immediately there.
You can zero in on it.
You can zero in on it. But oftentimes people, you know, for whatever reason, they don't remember.
But you can still treat that person.
Yeah, you can still treat them, yeah.
Wow, that's really amazing.
Yeah.
There was one more question that I had lined up here. Oh, yeah, it was to do with surrounding yourself, I guess, with other alternative and complementary medical practitioners. Do you think, is there any plan afoot in town to actually sort of get organized or have a clinic or anything that you've heard of? I'm just curious, you know.
Well, recently I started a page on Facebook called The Healing Place.
Ah, okay.
And I think that's my long-term vision be able to assemble alternative healers, partner with them.
Yes.
Partner with them.
So first step would be to put a Facebook page out there where people can actually sort of friend you and let you know about their presence and that they're maybe interested or something. And
sure,
I'm
open to partnering with people to referring people,
so
because I think it's important for the individual to have that.
Is that what people would search on Facebook, The Healing Place?
The Healing Place, yeah.
And that would show up there? Yeah. Okay, that's good.
And I know that talking with some of the other practitioners, over the years, they all agree that there's nothing as rewarding as when you're trying to help a person that maybe you've helped some part of them or you've helped them get to a certain place, but you know that if they went to see this other practitioner, that's the thing that they need right now.
Yeah.
And sometimes they just find the perfect fit because you know of all the other practitioners, but maybe the average person doesn't.
Right.
So you're in the perfect position to say, maybe you need vibroacoustic harp therapy, or maybe you should try homeopathy, or maybe you need a good massage, or maybe you need to learn how to do yoga or relax.
Mm-hmm.
Or
and if you had a bunch of practitioners that all did that for each other and really, you know, had that holistic approach. I know we keep on using that phrase, but it really is what's going on.
Yeah,
it's really cool. Well, our time is running out here. I noticed Sean Cooley, the host of Ankley Cooley, just came through the door and he's getting ready to take over the airwaves at 8:00. But Miriam, we really appreciate you coming in.
Well, thank you, John.
And giving us this glimpse of your practice. Yeah. I just want to remind people that you're going to be at our gallery next Saturday, the 23rd of January, 7:30 p.m., doing a presentation on your dynamic energy therapy, the power of the body to heal itself.
Are you going to do a live demo on anybody?
Possibly.
Oh, that would be good.
I'll be waiting for the press release.
Maybe she'll pull you out of the audience, Louise, to be the guinea pig.
Yeah, I twisted my leg at Zumba last week.
Oh, did you? Oh,
there you go. We already have. But it's probably because we had that big fight on
it's
Sunday.
It's probably because I've been kicking people at office here, so something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. That's been very interesting, and I'm sure the talk will be very interesting.
For sure. Yeah. And I also want to give your contact information, if that's okay, Miria?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, so people can reach it by email. It's at miria.healing@gmail.com. Keep it down over there, wouldn't it, Sean? miria.healing@gmail.com if you want to send an email to Miria. And your phone number, is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
613-677-9422. 613-677-9422 if you wanted to call up Miria and make an appointment for a treatment at her new office on 149 Main Street East in Vancouver. I say new, but I think you've had it for a while there.
I've been there for a bit.
You're sort of announcing that you're open for business kind of recently.
By appointment only, though.
Yes. So that's why people either have to email you or call you.
Yes, please.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks again, Miria, for coming in, and good luck with your practice. And I hope your presentation at, I'm sure your presentation at Arbor Gallery will go really well.
Well, thank you, Jean.
Yeah.
Great to be here. Thanks, Louise.
Thanks again.